Dear listeners, Sai Ram from Prashantinilayam, the most happening place on the planet, as I always say, and today is such a beautiful day, one of the most colorful and love-soaked days in Prashantinilayam. In the Prashantinilayam calendar, I should say, because one cannot help but recall the times when Swami used to be so eagerly looking forward to this day, walking behind the scenes to make this day happen. How his concern for the cows in the Gokulam, the deer, the pet elephant, was as complete and comprehensive as his love for the students. A few days ago, Prashantinilayam lost a valiant soldier of Sai Mission, Mr. Chiranjeev Rao, who served Swami for over 4 decades in various capacities as the caretaker of the ashram, as the manager of the canteen, as the executor of many important projects initiated by Swami personally, like the construction of accommodation blocks inside the ashram, construction of Dinajana Pathakam, the home for the orphanaged. Swami sent him to Gujarat in 2002 when devastating earthquake ruined hundreds of villages. He was Bhagwan's emissary to Chennai when tsunami struck the coast of Tamil Nadu and marooned the lives of thousands. Most importantly, he was the one who reported to Swami on a day-to-day basis, or rather session-to-session basis, about everything in the ashram and took instructions directly from him for the maintenance of this Prashantinilayam township. In fact, he left his mortal coil in a very blessed manner on the morning of July 21st, 2016, and he just moved on in his sleep, very peacefully, perhaps the divine name vibrating within him. I remember when Bhagwan asked him to speak to the devotees on one occasion in Sai Kulwant Hall. That was the year 2002, on the anniversary of the Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust. And in the small talk that he gave in front of Bhagwan, Mr. Chiranjeev Rao mentioned one point very emphatically. He said, "Swami is God. This is what is always there in my mind when I am with Him. And this is what gives me all the strength, the courage, the wisdom to carry out His instructions." In fact, on one occasion during Dasara, Swami had asked him to arrange 9 bricks required for the Yajnam. And the next day, when Bhagwan came to see the arrangements, he asked Mr. Chiranjeev Rao about it. And Mr. Rao obviously had done his job. He showed Swami the bricks which were kept near the Yajnam Kundam, the sacrificial fire pit. And when Swami saw that, he said, "No, there are only 8 here." And now, Chiranjeev Rao, sir, was shocked when he counted it was only 8, but he was really flabbergasted because he had definitely got 9. He had checked the previous day. It was certainly 9 and not 8, and now he had no clue how one had just disappeared. And Swami was so furious. Swami said, "What is the use of giving you a job to do, because you don't understand half the job. You execute it in a haphazard manner, there is no point asking you to do anything," and so on. Swami went on and on, and Swami was actually very harsh in his reprimand. And all the while, Mr. Chiranjeev Rao just stood there without even opening his mouth or uttering a word or looking at Swami. He just looked at his feet, and without even a slightest explanation of anything, not saying, "Swami, I had done this, please believe me, I had got 9, I had checked it last night, I don't know how it happened, I myself surprised," nothing. He said nothing. He just stood there, just looking at Bhagwan's feet, as Bhagwan's fury was just pouring on him. And when everything was over, Bhagwan then turned around, looked at the boys and said, "I only hid one of the bricks. And I did this only to show you boys the exemplary attitude of servitude of Sri Chiranjeev Rao. Unquestioning faith, undiluted surrender, unrestrained devotion, and a great disciplinarian. That was what Sri Chiranjeev Rao, in a nutshell, is." And the reason why this came to my mind now is Krishna Janmashtami always reminds me of how Swami tutored and trained and chiseled and shaped a devotee like Sri Chiranjeevi Rao. Every Krishna Janmashtami, Sai Geeta, Swami's pet elephant, used to come to the mandir gloriously decorated, and what a joy it would be to see the love exchange between Swami and Sai Geeta, Sai Krishna and Sai Geeta. She was Swami's darling child. I remember in 2006 when Bhagwan was feeding her apples, she was refusing to take the food. And I was wondering, what is the problem? Swami was now in a wheelchair, so he placed the fruit on her trunk. But Sai Geeta would not just accept. Swami tried to feed her so many times, but she never budged. She would never accept it on her trunk. Finally, Swami got up. He held on to the railing and he stood up and then placed these apples right into her mouth. Only then she accepted gladly. How much she valued that moment. How much that touch meant for her. Sai Geeta always grew up with Swami, feeding her like a mother. And she always wanted Swami to be closest to her. She knew she was his darling daughter. She had no doubts. And she always wanted that chemistry with Swami, that ecstasy of basking in his love, in his touch, in his sight, in his warmth. And Bhagwan would go to any extent for Sai Geeta. I'm mentioning all this because during the days when Mr. Chiranjeev Rao used to report to Swami, if any day he mentioned to Bhagwan that he had been to the hostel or the Gokulam or had come anywhere near that side, the first question Swami would ask is, did you see Sai Geeta? Is she fine? And then the next question would be, is she being looked after well? Is she getting sugarcane leaves to eat? And if Chiranjeev Rao sir was silent, Swami used to say, being an animal, she cannot speak, she cannot express herself like others. But when we know what will make her happy, when we know that she loves sugarcane leaves, shouldn't we do that? Shouldn't we take the trouble to provide what will make her happy? If we cannot do this, then what is service? This was Swami's love for Sai Geeta, and this is the way Swami, the divine administrator, master and manager, trained his servitors. All of us want to be his instruments, to whatever extent we can, to whatever level we can. And the way to do it is to first have a heart, and then use the head judiciously, and finally execute the orders of the heart along with the cautions, common sense, intelligence and practical knowledge of the head. And that is what will bring about an integrated personality out of us, the perfect balance of the head, heart and hands. It is in this month that Swami started the management program, the MBA course in Sri Satisai Institute of Higher Learning 30 years ago. In fact, on August 20th and 21st, the School of Management Studies and Commerce celebrated its anniversary with a two-day function wherein the students felicitated the faculty members, they heard inspiring talks from their seniors, they played management games and discussed how to be managers that Swami wants us to, how to be the managers that Swami wants us to be, not the conventional managers that every university produces. When the MBA program started in 1986, Swami clearly said, only the wealth or name that is acquired by righteous and honest means will be enduring and praiseworthy. Money that is earned by improper and immoral ways can confer neither peace nor happiness. The pursuit of money as an end in itself is making people greedy and excessively commercial minded. Many farmers are switching over to cash crops and money crops to earn more money. We should concentrate on meeting the basic needs of the country. Our programs should be based on our resources and our practical ability to achieve the goals. We also have to combine morality with spirituality in business and other spheres. This was one of Bhagwan's messages on the opening day of the management program. 1986. Swami wanted managers of his university to be leaders. As Dr. Chibber, the chief executive of Management Development Institute, New Delhi in the 90s, once said, Swami is preparing students to be spiritual warriors of the 21st century to unite humanity with the bond of love. And the way this is happening is fascinating. In the previous episode of Outside Inside Deep Inside, I played for you a conversation with an alumnus of Swami's management program, Brother Kota Shivkumar. And joining that discussion was also another distinguished individual, Mr. Ravi Naguri, the Chief Delivery Officer at Larsen & Toubro Technology Services in Bangalore. And it was quite an engaging discussion on how to be such a manager. In fact, we discussed how to practically implement work is worship, duty is God in our workplace, in our professional space. And Brother Kota Shivkumar took the parable of the pencil to illustrate this. Brother Kota Shivkumar is someone who has been in the HR area for nearly 30 years now. After he passed out of Bhagwan's college in 1996, he worked in the human resources development arena, and later in 2005 started his own human resources consulting firm called Insai Consulting. And Mr. Ravi Naguri worked with the central government for many years and later with the Department of Atomic Energy, and subsequently he moved on to the engineering space where he has been working for more than 12 years now. So both of them have tremendous experience working with people, and both of them are very interested and very, very keen in trying to implement Swami's teachings in the real world, in their workspace, in the relationship with their employees, with their workers, with their bosses. And both of them shared their real life insights in trying to implement work is worship, duty is God. And as I just mentioned, Brother Kota Shivkumar took the parable of the pencil. The pencil, the tiny little pencil, has so many beautiful lessons. The first lesson, if you want to do anything, you have to allow yourself to be held by someone else. The second lesson, you should be willing to be sharpened, because only when you are sharpened can you be an effective pencil, can you be an effective instrument. The third lesson, you should be okay to make mistakes. Use the eraser, correct your mistakes, write again and move on. Like this, there are many beautiful lessons that the pencil teaches us. The pencil gives us real principles for life, to make our lives in such a way that we can be an instrument in God's hands. So let's continue that discussion in this episode of Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. So this is what I'll play for you, the second part of this discussion with Brother Kota Shivkumar and Mr. Ravi Naguri in this last leg of Thursday Live, coming to you straight from the studios of Radio Sai.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
So welcome to Outside Inside Deep Inside. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu, and as I just mentioned, here is the second part of the discussion with Brother Kota Shivkumar and Mr. Ravi Naguri, placing work is worship, duty is God in the modern context. That leads on to the third point. You know, as you're making, being sharpened, as you're learning your ropes, I think you're going to make mistakes, and there is no one who can escape this process. I remember many years ago, the chief of Maruti Suzuki India,
right,
he was speaking to a group of MBA students, and he asked one of them, how many of you have made mistakes? And no one raised their hand. He said, then none of you have actually achieved.
Right, it's true.
It is okay to make mistakes. As long as Bhagwan says, you know, you learn from it. Non-repeating repentance, as Bhagwan used to say. So I think we should be willing to take those leaps of faith and willing to try out new things, because otherwise we will never do anything new.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, one way to look out those mistakes is probably somebody tries to get into a comfort zone. be reluctant to try something different, something more. From an industry point of view, I can say that this industry can no longer allow people to be in comfort zone, not ready, not willing to do mistakes. The days of cost arbitrage and cheap labor is gone for India, if I talk about services industry. You have to go beyond. You have to take risks. You have to be innovative. You have to be transformative. Then only you will be able to make your career, do an impact for yourself as well as for your organization. So I would even put it as getting out of your comfort zone. And organizations are helping. You know, they come up with the different ways to help the individuals to go beyond their normal duty, normal day-to-day work, and make them more innovative. That's the way I look at it, allowing them to do mistakes, making sure that they have the entire ecosystem to help them to do those out-of-comfort, out-of-box situations, and enabling them and allowing them to falter as well. You know, we talk about failures are the stepping stones of the success. You know, those steps need to be taken. I would say our industries are realizing and they are making it available for the individuals.
Right. In fact, I just reminded of a very interesting story from Ramayana. Not a very often spoken story, but this talks about the four brothers and the tutelage of Vasistha. And it seems Vasistha was teaching them, grooming them up in archery, lot of warfare and all that. And Vasistha taught them all in the same way about hitting a target, shooting a target from a certain distance. So day of the valedictory comes where actually they have a final test. In that final test, just Vasistha creates a little bit of change because he changes the place where they normally shoot. The distance and everything is the same. But now there is a wind that is in between. They do not know. None of the students know. And everybody fails that day. Except Rama. Finally, it was Rama's turn. Even the three brothers fail. They just manage to hit the target, but not at the center, but not the bullseye, but everywhere else. Okay. Whereas others, their arrows don't even go that direction. And the students are really disappointed because it was a sudden thing for them. It was a non-trained thing for them. Right? And then they show that what Rama, it seems, does is that he realizes he has been observing what others are doing. And then the only way he's different is that he just kicks his foot down and then he first observes how the wind is, what is the direction of the wind, by the way actually the mud is flying out and all that. And then he just changes his position in the way he holds the bow in a direction where he knows that now it takes a trajectory and it has to hit. And then it hits. Now you call it smart work. You call it doing a little delta X differently from what you have been doing before. And the real-time situation is always going to somehow present something which perhaps you have never faced in the past. Yeah. Each of us, we see that we, as much as we want to think that, you are an expert driver, but every moment you are on the road is a new situation for you, for example. You are a great surgeon, but the next case could be a very difficult case for you. You are a great singer, but that particular day something would be going wrong for you. You know, in fact, greatest artists have the off-color days. So the point to note is that there is something that always can take you by surprise. And what comes to the fore is your ability to try out something new differently, and this takes a little risk taking that Brother Ravi was talking about. See, the ability, I'm talking about that penchant that we people need to have to make a mistake. But it is not to be seen as a mistake. If you want to try out something differently, there is a possibility of making a mistake.
Not to be shy away, taking risks, because as no risk, no return. As it is said in investment banking and investment management, but that is true in life with everything.
Yeah, yeah. If I can add on, classic example in my experience I've seen is when a person becomes first time manager. So he has been all through doing everything himself and now suddenly he leads a team.
Right.
He doesn't know what to do. And that's where the risk or the mistakes start coming. Can I delegate? Can I ask the team members to do? Oh, if he does it, maybe I have to review and I have to check and do it again myself. It's better do myself. Classic situation I've seen when they become first time leading a team, they struggle. Because they don't want to take that risk. They don't want to make that mistake of allowing people to do themselves. Or sometimes even they look at, they should do the same way I used to do.
Right.
So those two are classic experiences I've seen from people where they tend to be resistant to do something beyond what they used to do earlier. And unless they do that, They cannot grow up the ladder. They cannot take additional responsibilities. So that's a very interesting thing I've seen.
Point. Just connecting to the risk-taking capability, I was reminded of, Swami used to always insist that most of the people or the youngsters and all should try to not just be employed but create employment.
Yes.
He used to say that you be them. You create something of certain value. Because I think there's a lot of wisdom in the, what Swami has told us, that when you create, even if it is small, even if it is not perhaps the biggest thing in the world, the satisfaction you have is something huge, point number one. And you would understand things more holistically end to end. You end up to be a generalist than trying to be a specialist somewhere. There's other connotation that comes up, which is very, very important in life. You know, a specialization that way is a narrow sense of trying to look at things in a non-holistic way. That's the whole problem. You're trying to alienate things and isolate things in such a small space, now trying to ask too many questions about it, which can be answered only because of the holistic nature, not because when you look at the narrow space. But this is the one of the problems that happens in the world. You try to get all answers looking at things narrowly. If you want to get all answers, you have to widen up your zone. Same thing is echoed actually also by our ex-president, Dr. Abdul Kalam. He made this statement to all the youth in the country saying that, become entrepreneurs. He says, try to be an employer. Try to create more employment. And he says that's the only way this economy can build. He says don't try to look for employment. Now, the major thing is that, do you want to be a consumer or do you want to be a contributor? Somebody took risk and then created a smartphone. Billions use the phone. But somebody took risk. Now, I'm not saying everybody need to do such a breakthrough innovation. But there are a lot of incremental innovations that you and I can make in our lives without necessarily depending on some major things. And when you do that, the amount of joy you get as a contributor is infinitely more than just being a consumer. So the movement is from being a consumer to a contributor. That is the one liberating part of work.
When we have that attitude, as you said, that we have to contribute.
Right.
You know.
Right.
We have to make a difference.
Right.
We just are not here only to consume the difference that other people have made in society.
Right.
But rather we have to now pay it back, right. Make others' lives better. How can we make it?
Absolutely.
I think if that zeal is there,
right.
Then probably you will think of doing something.
Absolutely. We look at the shallowness of lives where we try to compare ourselves and then people want to show off saying that what car I drive. What have you done to actually do in that car? You're not designed anything. You're not done anything. It's like children comparing. Oh, my father has a BMW and then your father has something else. You know, that kind of stuff. It makes no sense. It's very childish. Because at a childish age, you can consume.
Yes.
Since you're growing up and then you're still making your foundation. But at some point, each of us, when we come to our youth, we should say, I think all of us, even if we take, there is at least one area where we can contribute.
We can contribute. And in fact, there are times in life, you know, you feel very guilty of consuming if you're not contributing.
Absolutely. In fact, on a culturally in industry, in Indian industry and our general philosophy, what I've seen is most of the time we tend to be in the comfort zone and you try to do what you've been told. So that's why some of the industries, what we have come up is something called a value. So value is something over and above whatever is there in the statement of work.
Right.
And that's when you go beyond your norms and your restricted box and go out of the box and try to see what you can do. And that is what is another way to say, look at what else you can do by taking some more risk and some more value addition.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I agree.
Which means there is some drive in you.
Yeah.
Only if there is some drive in you, can you really drive the lives of many other people?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And maybe, you know, all that we end up doing in our lives is just influence ourselves or a small family around us. So what? So what? How does it matter? But still you have contributed. If you have changed the lives of or impacted their lives, how does it matter? One situation you inspired somebody to make a change in their lives. It's a very great thing you're doing.
Yes.
It's a God-given opportunity.
Yes. Yeah. We can make difference anywhere. We can make difference in our little family. We can make difference in our society. We can become a politician who can make difference in large sections of society.
And hopefully in the right way.
But one important element in these things is, you know, mistakes. That comes the fear, right?
Right.
The factor of fear.
Right.
The moment they become fearless and the moment they think that it's okay to do a mistake and there is organization, there is team which is willing to support you.
Absolutely.
I think that is critical, you know, getting that fearlessness or inhibition, taking out those inhibitions. Right. I think that is critical in my view.
Absolutely. When we look at the life of the most perfect role model for us, that being Swami, when we look at 14, he steps out and says, I'm going to be different. And a remote place where people are going to question you, who are you? What education do you have? What credentials do you have? What do you know about Shastra? What do you know about God? Who are you? Come on, keep quiet. And it's not one day's life, it is not 2 days' life, it is going to be a long journey. Swami always says that life is a long journey and not a one day's affair. And here is someone who steps out and then dares to say, it has to be this way. Now, our role model is showing what is the difference in life. You need not do different things, you have to do things differently. These are winners, right? So, Swami shows us the way to win. I'm not saying that each of us can do what Swami has done, but maybe in what He drives us to do, we can show some difference in what
Absolutely.
We do.
Fantastic.
Someone said, you know, after having come to the shore of the water, what is stopping you in jumping and enjoying it? Just don't waste your time analyzing, standing on the beach.
Yes. Yeah. If you want to become an instrument, you've got to do.
Yes.
The pencil has to write.
Right.
So, it doesn't matter whether you are being sharpened, doesn't matter whether you are making a mistake. So, just allow yourself to be held and keep doing.
One great thing we see is that, it just keeps the memories keep coming to my mind as I'm speaking. How many opportunities Swami has given to so many people in His presence, in speaking, in singing?
Yeah.
And how many people really were M.S. Subbulakshmi sir, how many people were the greatest orators? Not necessarily.
Absolutely.
But He very consciously made them do whatever they had to do.
Absolutely. I mean, that is what is educare. We talked about potential into performance.
Right.
I think that is what is educare, which what Bhagwan was doing all the time.
Right.
It's really amazing how Bhagwan used to make people who never thought they will sing, and people who never ever acted in their life to act in consecutive dramas year after year.
And then when people like me, we mess up, when Swami gives us an opportunity, the Himalaya of a compassion that He is, He comes and says, Guntu koncham baledu, something is wrong with His voice. He takes you aside and He tries to whip you up, you know. That's the compassion, that's the what a leader is all about, I guess.
Wow.
On that element, I think you have to keep writing. So that there are two attributes which stand out for me. One is being open and being flexible. You cannot say that I would probably do, looking at the industry, I'm talking about some jargons, but I will only do Java development, I will not do C++. That's not going to work. You have to write in C++ or Java or whatever it is.
Right.
And you have to be flexible. You should not say that I can only do development or testing or something like that. So unless you be open and flexible. Actually, we use a very interesting parlance in our organization. Says, you know, Netaji Subhas Chandra Bose asked for your blood. He'll give you freedom. We say, you be flexible for the first 5 years of your career. You'll make a career of yourself.
Absolutely.
So that's the important element, you know, being flexible, being ready to write on whatever be the situation, whatever be the project, whatever be the work you get in. The more open, flexible and passionate and committed on any work you give, the better will be the careers for them to move on.
Yes.
You know, whenever we talk about instrument of the Lord, I always think about Hanuman. Because if you look at any aspect of his life, his relationship, the kind of tasks he did, everywhere you find that he was that ideal instrument of the Lord. No, he
That's
always
true.
Allowed himself to be held in the Lord's hand. When Rama says that, you know, you build a hut of your liking.
Right.
That's where he just breaks down and Rama is clueless. Bhagwan used to so beautifully narrate this story. And says, Rama says, why are you crying? I just asked you to build a hut of your liking. It will where is my liking?
Right.
What mistake did I commit that you are thinking I have a liking of my own?
Yes.
So to always allow yourself to be held in His hands.
Yes. One great insight that also comes to me, Brother Vishu, is that, see, when we talk about Lakshmana, or when we talk about Hanuman, or when we talk about all this, in fact, I favoritely always talk about Saint Tyagaraja, who always used to speak in every Kriti about the fortune of these four people who are always found in the group photograph. You know, he says, if you take any Rama's photograph, you'll find always next to him Sita, Lakshmana, and then Bharata and Shatrughna, and Hanuman. So he says, what did these people do to deserve this? He used to ask Tyagaraja. And he says, when will I be in that picture? That was the question of Tyagaraja always, you know. You look at the purity and then the heart of a devotee.
Wow.
How he aspires for something. But let us say that these are some great examples of pure souls who had got that chance. Now, you and I, where we can take courage is that the same is true for us, but the way an artist, just as an artist, if you give a reasonably good violin in the hand of an artist, which is an instrument for him, he has to tune it till the point where it brings out music. So the tuning in process is the sharpening, second point that we talked about.
Yes.
Now, if you are resisting it, how can you be used as an instrument? Today, the point is, Swami is ready to accept us also as instrument, but he's tuning us.
Absolutely.
We should not forget this. We should never think that Hanuman was an instrument and we are not. We are as equal an instrument in the God.
See, if you are going through anything in life that is painful, you should know that you are just being sharpened.
Yes, that's a beautiful
thing. And who knows, the day comes when mellifluous, beautiful divine music he starts producing through you. And 10 people are now being helped by you in this world. That's the amazing part.
Yes, absolutely.
The fourth point, Brother Vishu, is about the most important part of you is what is inside. In fact, it is so deep that probably we'll end up speaking for a day only on that. That's the truth. But I think we can just effort to spend some time on that. You know, it's a very important point too. Brother, you have some thoughts on
that? Yeah, sure. I think when we talk about deep inside, that's a foundation, right? Unless that foundation is strong, the more stronger the foundation, the more better the career will be. So that is what they should, each youth should try to do. All of us. You may not see the result of the foundation. You may not see the foundation when the whole pencil is done or when you start your career. Unless you spend time, invest and make sure that the foundation is proper, your careers will not take forward. So that's a very important element for people to be patient, to invest and to make sure that the foundation becomes strong for their careers to take the next level.
Absolutely. If you look at any tall building like the Burj Khalifa, you'll find that the taller it is out there, the deeper the foundation. In fact, there are a lot of pictures that were making rounds about Burj Khalifa's foundation, 50 meters or something inside. So, and Swami said one more statement that for the beautiful palace called your spiritual life, self-confidence is the foundation. So, the self with the capital S that we are talking about, where you need to have the confidence in the self that you abide as a self, this is an inside thing. There's nothing outside about it. So, the popular theme of a personality, we taking confidence in our personality and therefore looking boisterous, looking pretty energetic outside, and we call it dynamism, that's okay. This is one definition. But this is what Stephen R. Covey calls the personality ethic of life. Personality ethic is superficial. And he says what is much more deeper is character ethic.
Yes.
The character ethic talks about what is inside. Therefore, the entire development approach in life is inside out and not outside in. That's the most beautiful understanding of life. There is something, our education system needs to first tell us, the very first thing in our life that somebody should teach us is that you're quite okay as you are inside. And all that is happening to you outside is a little bit of chiseling to just make you beautiful and useful in this world. And there is nothing wrong with you. And an education that is not giving this thought process is not an education at all. Because all education is in terms of your utility in the world. There is no more or no less being added to you as a self. You as the self are what you are. And when you look at it from this perspective, it's so wonderful that the fourth point is so deep, which is what every theology and every faith in across the world had spoken about. That's what they said. The you actually as you are is the God itself, which doesn't need any more changes. And you have always been that. And Swami said, being is lost in the art of becoming. So entire life seems to be the search for becoming something. And in the process, being is always taken for granted and forgotten. Now, if you look at it from a very spiritual point of view, the self is always you, and then you are there. That's one point. But when you look at it even from a work is worship model, simple thing is, each of us at that point in time when we are in our careers, etc., we know what is our inner strength. And each of us can be only as good as our strengths. We'll have to remember this. And from a HR point of view, I can say that people who, even if they have limited strengths, but can do know how to play by the strengths in every situation, are always winners in every situation. I'll give you an example. Brother Ravi, we always used to speak about a cricketer called Ravi Shastri. He had very limited number of strokes, they used to say, as a batsman.
He used to say chapati shot.
Chapati shot. He had, that's what, you know, but he had such tenacity, and he had somehow had the temperament to hold on till he can convert every ball that comes into that shot. And he ended up playing for this country for the longest time with some great innings and all that. Whereas people perhaps were much more talented because of lack of temperament came and went. Life is always showing at all levels that winner is someone who knows how to use strength, what, however limited it might be. You might not be a great singer, but if you know that there is some aspect of your singing which is good, and if you know in every situation how to project that aspect, you'll have your niche. people always respect you for what you are. It is only when you start getting greedy that I should be as good as someone who is more talented, your problems start. But given your strength, if you know how to play by your strength, you are always good. This is a simple thing.
And I think each one of us also should know that we do have a strength.
We do have.
Everyone has a strength.
Yes, yes, yes. In fact, before I hand it over, because I'm very sure Brother Ravi has something to add from the organizational point of view here perhaps, but I want to say this. There is, all the listeners should know about a very important study that happened called Multiple Intelligence Theory Study. And it was started after the Second World War. In the recent times, somebody called Professor Gardner, Howard Gardner, he did a major study, which is now the authority in this area, of multiple intelligence theory. And he said that human beings do not have one type of intelligence, as against what is normally thought. We are all used to what we call the analytical or some problem, solving some problems or data interpretation. This kind of intelligence, he calls it linear intelligence. It's like, you know, analytical, mathematical intelligence. But he says there are 7 to 8 types of intelligence in human beings. He calls it kinesthetic intelligence, the bodily intelligence. For example, Michael Phelps, the 8-time gold medalist in swimming in the Olympics, he consumes 12,000 calories a day. Do you know that you and I cannot perhaps consume more than 2,500 or 3,000? Because our bodies are not built to do that. Now, there is an intelligence about that body, and every time he goes on to do his heats in the day, he expends as much as 7,000 calories in the swimming heats. Now, what is that? What is the kinesthetic ability or intelligence of that body of Usain Bolt, who goes to 75 meters in a 100 meters race, which is being participated by national winners and champions from all the great nations, who are all so good? He goes to 75 meters and has the temerity and timing to look back, smile, and then win the race. What must be the bodily intelligence of this gentleman? Because a little here and there would make a difference. And then he has that. So, this is kinesthetic intelligence. There are some people who are paid millions in this world just because of their voices. They have auditory intelligence. Some people have visual or spatial intelligence. They are building architectures. Now, everybody's intelligence is different. And today, fortunately, the world is waking up to this. So, when you spoke about everybody having a strength, we need to come out of this paradigm that everybody should be an engineer or a doctor or things like that. This is a very shallow understanding of the whole stuff. If we can't even know what is the strength given, God-given strength in us, what have we understood about life? Strength is something that has been with you for a long time, right? So, my appeal to all the youngsters who are listening to this program is that, please look at yourself in terms of what is that you enjoy doing that could be your strength. What is that when you are doing, you feel very passionate about doing it again and again, that is your strength. Or perhaps, what if you have been doing most of the time, most of the people came back and said that somehow you do this well. This could be some indicators for you to understand your strengths.
Yes.
Right. So, we have to catch up with the strengths and then start now working on it to make it. Don't aspire to, don't become too greedy to start developing 20 strengths at the same time. It doesn't work like that. There's a book by Tom Ruth called Strengths Finder. All people who are aspiring for good careers need to understand what is the capability of using strengths. So, I would say, in a very corporate parlance, this principle just means that we have to find our strengths and play by strengths.
Wonderful. I think that is really fantastic. The most beautiful part of ourselves is deep inside.
Yeah.
You know, that's what we are discussing. Right. And I think if we believe, as Bhagwan used to say, you know, to taking it to a little spiritual level, Amrutasya Putraha, you know,
right.
Each person is a son of immortality. If you always believe that, you know, if God has given me a time and space on this earth, then He has definitely treasured something beautiful in my heart, and my job is to only discover that.
Absolutely.
Discover it and then uncover the potential of what God has already given.
Right.
That is something that each one of us should do.
And right.
I think once we know that there is deep inside this gift of God, then we will know how to convert our life into a gift.
Right.
To Him through society, yeah.
One other important aspect, and I've experienced and I've tried to explain to the people, is Swami keeps talking about all of us being the same Atma, Divyatma Swarupulara.
Yes.
So, the moment you realize that the deep inside of each one of us is the same Atma, and when you interact with your team or with your team members, you separate the individual from the activity. And your action or remarks or focus should be on the activities than the individual.
Can you give me an example?
Yeah. So, when a team is working together and one aspect of the project didn't go well. Typical reaction from a team member is, you didn't do the good job of that.
Yes.
Then the focus of that individual becomes on him.
Yes.
That he didn't do a good job. Instead, if you say, this job is not done well.
Yes.
Then the focus will shift to the job and yes. see how we can do the job better.
Yes.
So it's a very important thing not to be critical about an individual
yes.
rather than an activity. And that's what is deep inside. Everybody is there. Yeah.
I think once we have this approach to always separate the act from the actor.
Yes.
Because he's also an actor.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Just like someone takes up a role. Today he's a businessman, tomorrow he may be a saint. So if we can really separate that, I think then every time we can look at that person with a fresh perspective.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You will not typecast them.
Yes.
You will not become indifferent to them because they didn't do a particular job well. They may be good at some other job. You yes. are necessarily delimiting or limiting their activity, and you are also limiting your yes. your own views on that yeah. person.
And I think then you are more open also
yes.
to go to them yeah. with perhaps a new project.
Yes.
Suppose earlier you had assigned one work to them and you know it did not happen the way
right.
you had imagined. Nothing should prevent you
yes.
from approaching them for another project
yes.
if you look at them in a completely fresh manner.
Yes.
Right. And I think if you believe in that person totally, freshly,
yes.
I think that person's attitude also towards you will change.
Absolutely. Brilliant. And I've seen that experience. I've experienced that. The moment you separate out an individual from the act and you say, I'm talking about this work, not about you as an individual, the whole paradigm changes. And focus also will be on the problem solving than individual trying to correct himself. So it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, this is so much practical
yeah.
in real life.
Having said that, there's normally such a wonderful point Brother Ravi was saying. We call it differentiating between issue-focused communication and then person-focused communication. Are you focused on the issue or are you focused on the person? Okay, so that's a very, very important point. Now, when it comes to feedback, we'll have to balance out somewhere in this world. Suppose you do a good job, okay, and then the question to ask is that can I still speak about the issue? Or would you be happy if I speak about the person? So, on one side is a not so good performance. On other side is a good performance. So, what is your thought on this, Brother Vishu?
I think I would like to say that, you know, when it comes to appreciation, as they say,
right,
you should always appreciate people in public.
Right.
But if you have to reprimand, you should do it in private.
Right. So, what I understand you're saying is that when you are appreciating, appreciate the person.
You can appreciate both. You can appreciate the person and the work. Yeah.
Right. Appreciate the person and the work.
Yeah.
But when you're passing on a negative feedback or a feedback for improvement,
yes.
you can direct it more towards the issue rather yes. than the person.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So that's what we're saying. So yes, this is a definitely a mature way of leadership, the way. And then probably we're going to develop the people in a way where probably a situation comes where they can also take the feedback directly. Some people are pretty focused and then pointed in giving feedback.
Right. Huh? So, but again, it goes back to the same deep inside.
Right.
You have the same Atma.
Right.
You have the same strength.
Right.
You have the ability.
Right.
So, whenever you are giving a feedback
exactly.
on the activities rather than the actor,
exactly.
because the actor is the same.
Exactly.
Independent of
exactly.
whoever it is.
Right. So, this is exactly the point I was trying to make. There are two points which Swami indicates here which we should probably arrive at. Because the behavioral understanding is one thing I feel is a little superficial, but whereas what Swami points to is at a slightly deeper level, because like it's a slight difference between inside and deep inside. Okay. That's where I would put it, you know.
Yes.
Definitely behavioral, this part we are talking about is inside. Whether it's going to give you results always, I'm not too sure, but deep inside there is something else that I think Swami addresses. One is the oneness principle Ravi talked about.
Yes.
Oneness principle, if we can operate by that, nothing. In fact, in the book called My Baba and I, in the 13th chapter, Swami, that's the shortest chapter in the book of John Hislop. When John Hislop, it seems, went to Swami and said that, Swami, you talk about so many things. And then for Westerners like me, it is so difficult to follow many of the aspects. So what do you want me to do as sadhana in life? I get confused. We know that whether John Hislop has actually been to many other places like Ramana Maharshi, Arunachalam and all before he came to Swami. It seems Swami said that don't practice any of these things. I'll just tell you one thing. Just practice that one thing in life. Everything else is taken care, Swami said. What is that one thing? He said, right in the morning when you get up, the first person who's coming to you, or the first situation, say that, visualize Swami and say that, good morning, Swami. Inside, don't say outside. Then from that moment, everybody you are meeting in every situation, visualize only Swami, and then first tell inside, hi Swami. If somebody, your boss is shouting on you, how beautifully Swami you're shouting on me. So let the dialogue be this inside, Swami told. This is what Swami told actually, John Hislop. And he says, from morning to evening, just do this. Look at Swami in everything. You need not do any more sadhana, Swami said.
Amazing.
So this is what is directly taken from Gita. Visualizing, and then Swami said, Parulu Parulu Kadaya Paramatmudyanaya, Swami says in one of his poems. There is nobody called others. So when we take that approach, which Ravi is saying, it's a pretty mature spiritual state to understand that it is all operating from oneness.
I think that's when work automatically becomes worship.
Absolutely, right. Absolutely. Yeah.
Right.
I personally believe that then we would really see miracles also happening in work.
Right.
You know, a particular person who would have behaved in a particular way all the time, the last 10 times you have met, once you change the way you look at things, then the things themselves change.
Yes.
Because ultimately it's the srishti is based on our drishti, as Bhagavan used to say.
Yes.
So once you change the way you look at a particular person, he will automatically change.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It has to change. There's just one more point, Brother Bishu. It looks like I'm taking a lot of time, is it?
It's gone.
So, in the 9-point code of conduct that Swami gave, Swami said in one of the points that you shouldn't be talking ill of anybody in their absence. This is one point that Swami has given as a code of conduct.
Yeah.
Now, how do you do that? If you see, the most prevalent and then common issue all of us have is this. In communication, particularly we want to, however disciplined we might be in terms of our speech, we have walked the path, everything we are doing, nevertheless somewhere it just goes and then slantingly touches something.
Yes.
Right? Because there is always a sense of righteousness for this individuality here. Mm. To say that I am little more righteous than others, I am little more this than that, or whatever, that kind of feeling. So, with this feeling which we have inside, how to follow what this point of code of conduct is? Swami said that, understand only one thing. Now, I can explain this only in first Telugu and then in English. Swami says, Yedi jarugutunna, adi yavari valla jaragatledu, vari dwara jarugutundi. Which means, when something is happening in this world, it's never happening because of someone, it is happening through someone.
Yes.
Now, when this word in Telugu or Sanskrit called dwara, even in Hindi, dwar, actually it means an entrance, a door. The interesting part is, a door has no choices, or it doesn't exercise any choice about who is passing and who is not passing under it. It doesn't discriminate between who is passing. King, beggar, anyone. Its duty is to just allow it. So when you are saying that dwara, your entire animosity about the personality goes away when you look at it this way. What has to happen is happening, which is the first point that we talked about, is a surrender point. It had to happen that way. It is coming through the person. Through the person, not by the person. All animosity and emotions are coming because you have ascribed the ownership to that person by saying it is happening by him or by her. Bad performance has happened by you. Good performance has happened by you. These are all, both of them are wrong understanding. In the spiritual sense.
Yes.
In the worldly sense, it's okay. It's okay, you can understand that way. But in the spiritual sense, it's a wrong understanding. In the spiritual sense, it has happened through you right now. That's why we use the statement at the beginning saying that divinity chooses to express through self now.
Yes.
That's the most mature statement you can ever make in this world.
Yes.
Nothing more. So, divinity chooses to do apashruti through some singer. Divinity chooses to do shruti through some singer. That's the beauty of the mystery of the world.
And you know, whatever happens, you can just laugh it off because divinity loves variety.
Absolutely.
That's true.
I think then life actually becomes very easy.
Yes.
And no obstacle stays on. And no victory also really gets into your head.
Yeah. So the Dushana Bhushana Swami talks about the pride and guilt. These are the two things that make us suffer.
Yeah. You become an ideal devotee.
Right.
And an ideal devotee automatically becomes an ideal instrument.
Yes.
Yes.
Because only when you have equanimous to joy and sorrow, then you are a devotee.
Exactly. So Swami talked about this, and then Brother Ravi and then me, whenever we meet, we discuss about it. There's something called prasada buddhi for a devotee. You go to a temple, they give you a prasad. You don't start analyzing whether prasad needs a little more salt or sugar. Neither do you say that, oh my God, this is not the thing that I like, why are they giving me this dadhojanam or whatever. You don't say that, I don't like chakkar pongal, I'm not a sweet guy, but they are giving me sweet. When it is given, you accept it as prasad and just put it inside.
Yes.
Right? So, this you do because you are giving importance to the origin of that.
Yes.
When you know that sarva karma phala data or pradata is him, how come we are open to someone and close to others in life?
Yeah.
This is non-prasada buddhi.
Yes.
Prasada buddhi actually is knowing the origin, understanding the origin of everything that is coming.
Yes.
And accept it as
accept
prasada.
It.
Accept it.
Yeah. Actually, that leads us to the fifth point that we talked about in principle parable, if you look at it.
Yeah. You have to all the time write legibly.
Right.
You will write legibly. You will function as a great instrument.
Right. Exactly. Because that point talks about the connotation in the pencil parable is that painter uses the pencil probably on a smooth canvas, an artist. A plumber uses the pencil on a wall, which is very rough. A carpenter is going to use it on wood that is very rough. The pencil which is in the retail shop doesn't know who will come and pick it up. The pencil never knew. Some pencils are getting picked up by artists who are using it on soft canvas. Now, a pencil that is feeling very pained when actually suppose somebody is writing. Let us just give an example of a four-year-old who is writing, doing a little bit on the walls. And then the pencil is feeling very pain. And let us say that the pencil has life here. And the pencil tries to resist and say that stop. And then the child is not listening to it. And then the pencil goes on a non-cooperation moment, let us say. In the sense that it stops writing. I don't know, if you have done something, sometime you'll see that pencils, even if they have the lead, if you continue to write on the wall, they stop writing after a while. So let us just assume that the pencil stops writing. What do you think the four-year-old does? What do you think she does? And she's going to throw the pencil away and then say that if you're not going to write, somebody else is going to write. This is the harsh reality of life. The harsh reality of life that we know, we all should know, is that if we complaining about the surface that has been given to us, if we fail to do the purpose for which you have been created, if not you, it is going to be somebody else.
You have missed your chance.
You missed your chance. That's a simple but harsh reality of life. So I think that is the essence of this, but you know, I think it will be great to hear from you.
No, in fact, another way to look at it is if you look at all the first four rules or what you say, attributes which you manage to understand, and if you follow all of them, you would write.
Yes.
Yes. And you will write legibly.
You will write legibly. Yeah.
From a human resources perspective, we often say that no one is indispensable in an organization, right? Yes. Brother, are you?
Yes, yes, absolutely.
No one in any organization is indispensable. And then the great poet Potana says, there have been kings, Rajulu, Chakravartulu, where are all those people? Even Swami often quotes that poem. He says, where are all those people? Do you know where they are? We talked about King Ashoka, King Chakravarti and all. Where are all those people? What footprints have they left on the sands of time? So the very strange thing about life is that it doesn't matter who you are in this creation. Because there is no individuality that is very separate. You are pristine only because of the oneness of the whole thing. You are not pristine because of an individuality. It's a simple truth at a spiritual level. But talking about the corporate sense of using this, when you have been given an opportunity, is it possible for us to accept and not resist? Because resistance means stress, acceptance means joy.
Yes.
Another way to look at it is, it could appear as a challenge.
Right.
But if you take it as a challenge, it's a stress. But you take it as an opportunity.
Opportunity.
It will be great. Classic example of this rock being seen by a sculptor. You know, you can say that what this rock is doing, and but if it is sculptor who is seeing it, it's a great opportunity to make a beautiful statue out of it.
Absolutely.
Yes. I think that's the mental thought process which we can put it into the team and ourselves. That would be great.
Yes. In fact, history seems to be replete with some wonderful, inspiring examples of people who have at certain point in time lost everything after rising to a certain level of stardom. People lost, they came to almost nil in their life and then they rose back. Okay. Now, it would have never happened if they have not accepted the situation. This is what we need to know. Acceptance, while, you know, we can say that destiny might take you anyway. But the point is, when you are at the lowest point of your life, or everything in you saying that I don't deserve this, I deserve something better in life. When everything in you says that, but you can resist or you can accept. Carl Jung, the disciple of Sigmund Freud, he says, what you resist in life, it shall persist in life.
Yes.
Right? So, resistance means persistence. What you are, in the form of resistance, you are giving strength to some things in your life.
Yes.
To stay for a longer time.
Absolutely.
So the smartness of life is to accept.
Absolutely. Acceptance leads to cheers. And resistance leads to tears.
It's a good one.
Utilitarian. In fact, Brother Ravi was saying right sometime back when we spoke about the very first parable, again, how it joins back. Most of the time, the acceptance of a situation and then moving on can easily come by being subscribing to a greater purpose and mission.
Absolutely.
You know, yes. You have mental, and then that gives you the discipline.
Yes.
And then
the higher learning, yes. The higher purpose.
Yes. Right. Yes.
I think that's where the whole discussion started.
Exactly. And it ties back there.
Yes, it ties back there. In fact, sometime back, I read this very beautiful line someone had sent, which said, the best expression of love for God is silent devotion, silent selflessness, silent sacrifice, silent surrender, and silent acceptance.
Hmm. Wonderful. Wonderful. Wonderful.
If we can silently accept everything that comes, as you mentioned, as His prasadam, then our life will become a beautiful prasadam for him.
Absolutely, agree.
And enjoyable prasadam.
Enjoyable.
That's important thing, yeah.
Wonderful. I think after such an eloquent thing that you said, the best thing for me to be at least is be silent. I can't say anything better than that.
I should really thank both of you because it was a very enlightening discussion. We all want to be instruments of the Lord. Some of us know it. Some of us perhaps are knowing it. But that is the journey that we all are in. We want to, because that's where the joy of life comes in, you know, when you are really held by His hand.
Right.
Just like a little kid, you know, when father is sitting in the scooter behind and going on the bike and this fellow is enjoying that joy on the face that he's riding the scooter.
Yes,
absolutely.
That is the innocent joy that we want to experience, you know, when he's there taking us along.
Very good image.
But that will happen only when we let him take over. And once we let him take over, you know, then we let go and we let God in.
Right.
And then you accept. You know, once you always know that I have let God in, then you accept. Then of course, once you accept, then the Father is bent upon making you an expert driver.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because He wants to give you the thrill of life.
Yeah. Yes.
He wants you to be happy in life.
Yes.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Brother Ravi and Brother Kota Shivkumar. I hope that we get more opportunities of such satsangs where we can relate Bhagwan's teachings to real life so that we can really convert our lives into His message. He spent 86 years telling, my life is my message, my life is my message. I think it's our duty to spend at least 86 minutes
right
every day thinking, how can we convert our lives into His message.
And I completely, you know, you just echoed, I think, the thoughts in both of our minds. Probably this session till now must have gone for 86 minutes or 90 minutes, is what I'm presuming.
Oh, yeah.
And then I think this is what Swami has taken. The pure grace that flowed in terms of making us think about Him and then get into this kind of thinking process in which He has given us as a dog. There's nothing but His pure grace. And I feel that's what is happening right now. And thanks a lot for making this possible and then facilitating this.
Thanks to Bhagwan. Thank you so much, sir.
Sairam. Thank you.
So that is how this interesting discussion concluded. We had it for more than 1.5 hours. Personally, I enjoyed the discussion and I hope you also found something useful from what Brother Shiv Kumar and Mr. Ravi Naguri shared. If you have any queries or comments, as always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. Thank you so much, dear listeners, for being with us. Thank you so much for your mails. Thank you so much for your encouragement. It's time to bring the curtains down on this day-long Thursday life. And as I leave, I place my humble salutations once again at the lotus feet of our most beloved Bhagwan for this beautiful opportunity to connect with you, to share His love. Let us ruminate on every word that He has said and make that word a real action in our lives. Thank you so much. Sairam.